Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. One of the things that Ajahn Chah used to emphasize a lot, or encourage us a lot in terms of approaching practice, and particularly meditation practice, is to this kind of theme of being willing to learn from everything. That sense of whatever our experience, there's something that we can learn from it, understand, gain wisdom from, gain knowledge from. As they there's a it's just a habit of the human mind to say, like in our meditation practice, when we experience peaceful states of mind, some tranquility, then, you know, we call that good meditation. We're having practices going well. This is good. And, we get either excited about it, or that's what we're measuring it by, what we want it to be, or feel that's how it should be. And when things are going a bit more, there's some difficulties, or there's some experience of restlessness or irritation or doubts, and we call that bad meditation. Our meditation is really bad. Everything's bad. And and we miss the opportunity to learn from both of them. And of course, when things are, when we can say that it's going good, then we feel good about ourselves. And when we put a label on it of it's bad, then we feel bad about ourselves, and our sense of self, the sense of the world around us, keeps sort of going up and down like that. And there's a kind of an obstacle that is being created that is not really necessary. Is the what is more important than the actual experience or the state of the mind at any particular moment is the willingness to know it, to reflect on it, to investigate it, to understand it according to its nature. And this is a let's say, like a skill that so where Ajahn Chah said, you know, being learning from everything. You know, it's quite natural that we go through periods of time when we've got energy and we're kind of inspired, and we go through periods where, sometimes it's a bit of a slog. Again, it's kind of natural. It's kind of ordinary. But in looking at it in terms of Dhamma, that willingness to learn from it, investigate it, seeing it according to its nature, and of course the nature that the Buddha is always pointing to is that just the nature of its impermanent, changing, uncertain nature, its unsatisfactory and imperfect nature, and its not self nature, its impersonal nature. And none of those states, experiences actually sort of define us as what we are, what our self is, what we call I or me or mine. Those are our, or if we're defining it like that, then we're picking up a burden that is going to torture us, really. So in our meditation, in our practice, reminding ourselves to be willing to learn from our experience, and to not draw conclusions or assumptions of value out of changing states of mind. Even when we're experiencing refined states of consciousness, most like the person who came to Ajahn Chah and was excited and I think probably a bit puffed up of the kind of the states of refined states of consciousness, of meditation, of insight and conviction of having attained at least the level of stream entry, if not higher, and trying to get verification from Ajahn Chah, sort of what level that they had attained, and all Ajahn Chah did was a kind of grunt and sort of say, "Well, it's better than being a dog," you know. And of course, they got really incredibly angry and offended, and which so there was their attainment put to its test. Those creations of identity and value put on things, so that the willingness to return to a place of knowing, of awareness, of investigation, of wise attention, yoniso manasikara. This is the quality that really allows the cultivation of all the aspects of our practice, whether it's the aspects of sila, of our virtue, of our development of mindfulness, our cultivation of skillful action, on right up to sort of the highest insights, that all of it needs to be have the underlying quality of yoniso manasikara, of wise attention, a skillful consideration, reflection, in accordance with the Dhamma, so that picking up of the path, and being willing to reflect on it from a place of Dhamma. There's a beautiful sutta that I read recently of the Buddha comparing the practice, spiritual practice, meditation practice, comparing it to the cleaning of gold, and that the gold needs to be, especially I think this is particularly gold that's been like washed from a stream. So the Buddha is saying that first they need to take the coarser kind of gravel and rocks and dirt, and what needs to be washed out. Then after that, the gold washer's apprentice has washed those coarser aspects out, then has to go back and wash it again to get the kind of the finer sand and dirt out, and then after that it still needs to be gone back and washed again until there's only just the actual flakes of gold. And then once the one has those flakes of gold, then it needs to be smelted, it needs to be watched carefully. It needs to be slowly smelted, and making sure that it burns off any last impurities. And so the Buddha compared that to the coarser aspects of that washing process, of being able to relinquish unwholesome actions of body, speech, and mind, and then going back and then reviewing the mind, and the sort of the second washing is the being able to relinquish the aspects of the samma sankappa, that bringing, being able to relinquish the aspects of sensual desire, ill will, of harming, and then the third sort of washing the Buddha compared to the being able to go back and relinquish the thoughts of the sort of persistent thoughts or subtle thoughts of around thoughts of family and relatives, thoughts of one's home, country, thoughts of like a fear of criticism or being misunderstood. And then once that mind is starting to be settled, then one needs to develop the meditation in more subtle ways of be attuning to the suppleness and the malleability of the mind, so that the mind is able to really settle, to really clarify, to become peaceful and clear. But it can't be pushed, and you can't force it too much. You need to be careful with it. It's just that smelting process of gold is something that one has to be careful of. So in the same way, and then as one attends to the mind, then it can be directed to a greater purpose. So that in our practice, so paying attention to those different levels, and then that sense of, again, that being willing to learn from the learn from our experience, learn from everything that comes up, so that we're looking, okay, is this a coarser aspect of our habitual mind, of our that we need to relinquish, are these how to draw in and refine and settle the mind. And this is where, particularly for us in this period of retreat, and we've had several weeks now of a practice of readings of group practice, and have more time now for some individual practice, just putting attention on to how to refine, how to settle the mind. And that's where, so picking up the object of meditation, and say like the breath, or if people are using Bhutto, or using the breath in conjunction with Bhutto, or doing metta bhavana, or doing subhagamatana. I mean, it doesn't really matter in terms of the object of attention, but it's like picking up that object bringing it to mind. And it's like how Ajahn Chah described the the use of the mind, lifting up the object of meditation to the fore, so that it's sort of, that's vitakka, bringing that, lifting up the mind, lifting up the object of attention, clarifying it, and that vitakka, and what Ajahn Jeff translates as directed thought. So directing the thought to the object of meditation, and then using the vichara, the evaluation, so that the mind is then looking at it from different angles, reflecting on it, using that willingness to learn from everything. Is this comfortable? Is it not comfortable? Is it pleasant? Is it not pleasant? What direction is this going? What's the past experience? How to sustain this? How to sustain interest? How to brighten the mind? How to use that lifting up of the mind after that? Because once you start that evaluation or that reflection, that investigation, it's just so easy for the mind to get lost or get caught up in some other train of thought, because that's the nature of the mind, is that as you're, whatever thought you have or feeling, experience, it's got a feeling tone, and it's got a it has a memory, it has a perception. Sanya and vedana are part of each mental moment. So then that sanya of memory, perception, association, that it comes up quite naturally. And sometimes there's associations that are stronger, more vivid, and it's easy to get pulled in, and then it brings up another association, and then pretty soon one is thinking about something completely different than the meditation, and that's pretty ordinary, but it's that the willingness to, that isn't where I started, and then being willing to lift up that vitakka, lift up the object of the meditation again, clarifying the breath, clarifying butto, bringing it up again, and then. Because there's inevitably, there's this kind of associations and chatter going on in the mind sometimes, different thoughts. And if we take them all seriously, then, we end up getting pulled around. And it's sort of that making it kind of... And again, that's the function of yoniso manasikara, that wise attention. It's like, what is it that's worth attending to so that the mind sustains its interest in the object, sustains its interest in investigation? And it's like, Ajahn Chah gives a really nice image. He said it's like when you're having a conversation with somebody, another adult, and there's a child nearby, and the child is kind of chattering. A small child is just kind of chattering away, or it's playing with something or other, and that's because that's its nature. The child is sort of, chattering and babbling and playing with something or other, because that's what children do. But if you're an adult and having a kind of a reasonable conversation with another adult, then you pay attention to that. You're able to sustain your attention on the conversation that you're having with that other adult, and rather than getting either swept up and caught up in what the child is doing, or getting irritated and averse and distracted by it, because it's just the sort of the babbling of a child. So that one sort of recognizes that it's there, And but one doesn't need to get involved in that, engaged in it. So he said, in the same way that the mind, kind of babbles and chatters images and things pop up in the mind, but we need to be able to, say, maintain the conversation with our meditation object, and maintain the conversation with our investigation of Dhamma, as opposed to the getting distracted in the kind of the babblings of the mind, because that's what minds do. Minds think and associate and have different feelings, but that isn't what we want to invest our attention on. We don't want to get caught by that. We can recognize it for what it is, but direct our attention to something more fruitful, so that sustaining of attention on the meditation object and investigation. Or developing the continuity of attention on the meditation object, of the having that continuity of attention that we keep bringing up, so that there's a clarity being established and a continuity of clarity, and say with the breath, so that one is lifting the experience of the in breath and the out breath up in the mind, following it, directing attention, sustaining attention, not forcing and clamping down on it, because there needs to be a certain subtlety or a certain suppleness of attention. A certain, the word that the Buddha uses of, malleable, where we're creating the mind that is adaptable, it's malleable, so that recognize, being able to sort out, okay, what's of value and what's not, and paying attention, allowing attention to be drawn into what is of higher value, so that that's that vitakka and vichara, that directed thought and evaluation, and using that function of the mind, that ability of the mind, to lift up the object of attention, and then to sustain it, and develop that sustaining using that reflection, investigation, and investigating with those themes of anicca, dukkha, anatta. I mean, that's kind of bread and butter for our practice. This is what is the basis of, considered the basis of vipassana. And vipassana is a seeing through, and that's the literal translation. So it's seeing through the tendencies of the mind, seeing through the habit of creating identity, that seeing through the habit of reacting to the particular feeling of the moment, in the sense that something feels good in the morning, in the moment, and we get excited. It feels uncomfortable and we get kind of irritated or fearful or frustrated, and seeing through that, And coming back to that sense of, oh, this is the way things are. This is the nature of things. This is the nature of experience. And what we seeing in that way, that's where the mind starts to be able to relinquish, to let go, to be able to put things down, to detachment. So then detachment doesn't come from pushing away or trying to force things to be according to one's preference, but detachment comes from seeing things in their true nature. And seeing things in their true nature, the mind detaches naturally, it doesn't create attachment. Just that seeing, and as that seeing becomes more consistent, more clear, it's like with the image that the Buddha gives with that. That gradual purification of gold, that washing away of the different impurities, there's a luster and radiance that comes from gold. And in the same way, there's a luster and radiance that comes from the heart, from the mind, as it is. Reflects, investigates, sustains its attention around an object that is, say, that's satisfying, in the sense of that the breath or buddho or metta, those are all objects it's possible to find a sense of satisfaction, of contentment, and clarity. And this is where, as we, there's a phrase that the Buddha uses that kind of characterizes our practice. Dhammaragena dhamma bhiti. So that sense of, that desire for the dhamma and delight in the dhamma. Looking at things in a way that helps to foster that sense of that desire for the dhamma and delight in the dhamma. And as we reflect on the possibility of the mind to settle, to clarify, to become peaceful. I mean, there's a delight there, because we've all been around long enough to have tried to experience gratification, satisfaction, contentment in the world outside. And it's just not there. It's not that it's a bad thing, or that it's, but it's just it just keeps slipping away on us. Whereas as we reflect on the nature of Dhamma, of truth, and reflect on the ability of the mind to perceive and to dwell in Dhamma, there's a real a delight there, and to allow the mind to experience that, to steep itself in that, and reflecting on that very nature of that when we allow the Dhamma, allow truth to inform the mind, then there is this quality of well-being, of happiness, that is quite natural. And it's not that it's ours to claim, or that it's you create an identity around it, but it's just is something natural, part of the process. Allowing the mind to detach from that as well. It's just sort of, well, let's say that is this is the nature of things. This is this is how things are. And that's that detachment of seeing things in their true nature, that yathābhūtā ñāṇadāsanaṁ, knowledge and vision of the way things truly are. And that's not something that's far away from us, that's distant, that's otherworldly. It's just this body and this mind. This experience here, this is what we have to investigate. This is the ground of our experience. And when we allow it to inform the heart, then there's this inclining to Dhamma, and desire for the Dhamma and delight in Dhamma. These are qualities that allow the mind to become settled, to become clear, to release, to detach, to put down, putting down the burden of our habits of identifying and wanting things to be according to our preference, wanting things to be according to our views, opinions. That those qualities of just seeing how the that those forces of that are the cause of dukkha, kama tanha, just as we chanted tonight in the Dhammacakka Sutta, kama tanha, bhava tanha, vibhava tanha, that desire for sensual gratification, pleasure, comfort, security, desire for being, becoming, getting things either internally or external as we would like it to be, and wanting the world to be this way, wanting us to be a certain way. And vipavatanha, not wanting, resisting, pushing, fearing, objecting to, shouldn't be this way. Those are that dissonance that's created with those desire impulses, to be able to relinquish, to let go. And then that detachment forming the base of peace, and the detachment arising out of clear seeing, seeing things in their true nature. It's not something that is distant from us. It's not something that is far away. It's just in this in-breath and this out-breath, in this body, in this mind. That being willing to learn from everything, being really to pick it up, lift it up in the mind and investigate it, lift it up in the mind and evaluate and kind of take an interest in it. And not in the sense of interest of, I've got to make it be some way, but take an interest in say, how's that work? How can I understand it? How can I be free within this experience? And as we hold it in that way, there's a falling away that allows the mind to become settled and pure, really. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening.
Sadhu, sadhu, anumodam.